All right. Morning, everyone. Today's daf is Sukkah Daf Beis. First, I want to show appreciation to the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is learned with Zecher Lois Zaltzman Lupin. We begin our next Masechta in Shas. Sukkah, just in terms of the Masechta itself, is made up of five prakim. The organization of the prakim are basically as follows. The first two prakim of the Masechta deal with the mitzvah of Sukkah. So, prakim numbers 3 and 4 deal with the mitzvah of lulav and hadasim and aravos and esrog, the arba minim, and then parak 5 deals with sukkah in the base of mikdash. Okay, unlike the previous masechtas yumam psachim, where a lot of discussion revolved around life in the base of mikdash and the avoda, especially yuma. I mean, yuma is primarily avoda. Of the 8 prakim of yuma, 7 of them dealt with the avoda, and one of them dealt with the inuyim. So, but sukkah is much more hands-on, much more practical for us, unfortunately, without a base of mikdash. Most of the discussion takes place, revolves around mitzvahs that are still nogeya, are still relevant. So the mitzvah of sukkah, which is obviously still nogeya, that's the first 2 prakim. Lulav and the Dalaminim is the parak 3 and 4. And then one parak is dedicated to the topic of life, sukkah life in the Beit HaMikdash. Where we told about the mitzvah of sukkah in the Torah. So Parshas Emor. Parshas Emor, the Torah tells us that it's incumbent upon us on the 15th day of Tishrei, the 7th month of the year, to take out our sukkah and to take out the Dalaminim. Just quickly to review the psukim. So there's a chag, there's a festival there during 7 days, starting on the 15th day of Tishrei. Days 1 and day 8 are gonna have Shabbat status to it, and the middle is what we call Chol Hamoed. Well, kach demachem yom harishon, and what you do is you take on the first day, priyetz hadar kapos tamarim vanafei savos varvei nachal, and then what you do is you take on the first day what we'll call Dalaminim, the 4 species. When we get to the 3rd parak, we'll try to identify what they are, although I kind of feel like we know already. And you're going to rejoice in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu for 7 days. Okay, there's already a clear ambiguity in the pasuk. The Torah is not totally clear about how many days we're supposed to take Lulav and Esrog. The pasuk starts off by saying you take on the first day, and then the pasuk ends off by saying, and then you do it for 7 days. And we will explain that discrepancy later in the Masechta. Okay. And then the next pasuk is Tishrei Shivas Yamim. Then the Torah tells us that there's an obligation for us to sit in the sukkah for 7 days. So every citizen sits in the sukkah. Later in the 2nd parak, we'll talk why the Torah speaks in such global terms. Every citizen sits in the sukkah. That's a 2nd parak discussion. So that you, for your generations, you'll know that I placed you in sukkahs as we walk through the desert. Okay? Adkan. That's the Torah Shebichsav. Okay, as Ben so eloquently said last night, that's the Torah Shebichsav is a goof, and then we turn to the neshama. So now we go to the Torah Shebaalpeh. So the Torah Shebaalpeh, we start now on Sukkah Daf Beis, and the Mishnah is going to start detailing the halachas of Sukkah. Sukkah is a structure. And so a lot of the halachas that we're going to be discussing over these next 3 weeks of Gemara are going to be structural halachas. So those of you who have a good visual, have a good architectural design, are going to, and an engineering mind, are going to enjoy a lot of the discussions that take place over the next 3 weeks, where we're going to be discussing the structure of the sukkah. The sukkah is an extraordinarily simple apparatus. It's basically a hut. We're going to be discussing dimensions, minimum, maximum, area, material, angles. So all these things are going to be discussed within the context of the Masechta. We start off with a very simple halacha. The Mishnah starts off, sukkah shi gavola mala me'asrim amah psula. So if the sukkah is higher than 20 amas, it's pasul. So an amah is obviously a linear measurement used in the time of the Torah, the Mishnah, and the Gemara. An amah is somewhere, in terms of a conversion from an amah to what we know to be linear measurements, so we're not 100% sure. Their measurements were based on the average length of limbs and extremities, and so an amah is basically as you bend your elbow from the point of your elbow to the top of your middle finger. But obviously there are different heights of people and there are different lengths, and we're looking for an average. So we say it's somewhere in the range between 1.5 to 2 feet is the length of an amah. So I say 2 feet just so that we can always deal with nice whole numbers. It makes it easier. So when the Mishnah says that if the sukkah is higher than 20 amas, so you got to imagine something in the ballpark of 40 feet. 40-foot sukkah is high. A one-story building is 10 feet. A four-story building is 40 feet, approximately. I'm just helping us give us a visual of what we're talking about. So you're talking about a sukkah that's about four stories high. Okay, that's obviously very high. The Mishnah says that if it's higher than 20 amas, so it's possible it's no good. It's the disqualified sukkah. Why? That's going to be today's topic. Today we're going to discuss why the sukkah cannot exceed more than 20 amas high. Rav Yehuda Machshir, Rav Yehuda is fine with it. Rav Yehuda disagrees with the Tanna Kamma. He says that such a sukkah is acceptable. V'sheina gvo asar tfachim. Now we talk about the minimum height. It's got to be minimally 10 tfachim high. So you're talking about a really low sukkah. It is approximately the height of this desk. Okay, every tefach is, there are 6 tefachim in an amma. 10 tefachim is somewhere in the ballpark of an amma and a half. So 10 tefachim, let's put it this way. Tefach is the distance of the span of a fist. Again, we're looking for an average, so it's somewhere in the range of 3 to 4 inches. So just let's assume the most, even though for halachic purposes we probably wouldn't, but assuming 4 inches, so 30 times 4, so I'm sorry, 10 times 4, it's 40 inches off the ground. 40 inches off the ground, you're talking about a little bit more than 3 feet off the ground. Okay, so this is not, whatever, it's about the height of this table. So you have to now imagine sitting in a sukkah where the schach goes up to here. So you can't even sit in such a sukkah. So one thing which we'll go over later this morning, but I'll just quickly mention now, is that in the good old days, they didn't sit in chairs like we're doing right now. They reclined on some sort of a couch. So what you would do is, I'm not going to demonstrate. hopefully I don't need to explain why. But what you would do is you would basically lie couch down on the floor, and you would lie down in such a sukkah. Obviously it would be very low. But it can't be lower than 10 tefachim, the Mishnah says. If it's not higher than 10 tefachim, v'shein la gimel defanos, and if it doesn't have 3 walls, meaning, how many walls does the sukkah need? So the Mishnah says it can't have less than 3. V'shechamta meruba mitzilta psula. And if there is more sun than there is shade, so then it's going to be possible. Now we're talking about the actual schach itself. The schach that lays over the top of the sukkah. Over the course of these Mishnahs coming up, we're going to be discussing exactly all the halachas of the schach, but just for our purposes, right now we want to know about the density of the schach. So the Mishnah says it has to be more shade than sun, meaning that when the sun shines down and a shadow is cast from the schach, you have to see, there has to be enough density of schach so that you're witnessing on the ground more shade than there actually is sun. So in other words, I need more than 50% of the schach to be made up of material. If it's more, if 50% or greater, if greater than 50% is there, so that's no good. All right. I'm going to introduce us to so those are the halachas mentioned in the Mishnah, and I'm going to introduce us to a concept which we're going to see a number of times. We'll see it today already a couple of times, and we're going to be seeing it over the course of this parak. Okay. We keep referring to the structure as a sukkah, right? The entire entity, what we sit in, the walls, the top, we call that a sukkah. What's the definition of the sukkah? Meaning, what is the main defining part of a sukkah? And what gives it its name? So, if you take a look at the Rashi in the Mishnah. You look at the last Rashi in the Mishnah. It's the third line down. So Rashi says, Shechamta meruba mitzota, hamu ad batal berov, v'harek hu kimisha'eno. So Rashi says, if I have more sun than shade, if I have more air than material, so then the material becomes batal, becomes nullified. And Rashi says, and it's as if the material is not there, v'al shem haschach karui sukkah. And you know why it's called a sukkah? It's called a sukkah because of the schach. Meaning Rashi tells us that the main defining role of a sukkah, the walls are there just as a hechitimtza. They just provide structure. But in terms of definition, what is the definition of a sukkah? So Rashi tells us it's a schach. Schach is the defining point of a sukkah. Without schach, it's not a sukkah. Now, it could be that there aren't walls, although, there is a requirement for walls, but walls aren't what define the sukkah. What defines the sukkah is going to be the schach. And Rashi says, that's why it's called sukkah. Sukkah emanates from the word schach. So you'll see later on how that will play a role in our entire discussion, but it's just an important defining moment of what a sukkah actually is. Okay, good. Start with the Gemara. The Gemara is gonna compare our Mishnah to the first Mishnah in Erevin. It wasn't that long ago that we did Masechta Erevin, and if you remember, okay, I don't remember a lot of what we did in Erevin, but if you remember, the first discussion in Erevin was exactly identical to the first discussion we're about to have now. Tanan Hasan, we turn to the Mishnah Erevin, Mavu Shugavo Measu Mama. If my Mavu is higher than 20 Amas. Now, Mavu is actually not a name of any item. A Mavui is a name of an area. It's a what we would call an alleyway, not the best translation, but basically it is as you turn off the main road to go into people's houses. So basically here's how the route would go. It would first go through an alleyway. In other words, you would turn off the Rishus HaRabim, the main road. You would turn into an alleyway. And from that alleyway, there would be entrances to go into people's courtyards. And from people's courtyards, you would go into people's houses. So it would be Rishus HaRabim, then funneling into a Mavui, then funneling into a Chatzar, and ultimately going into people's homes. So the Mavui is adjacent to the Rishus HaRabim and open to the Rishus HaRabim. And now, the Mavui had three walls circling around it, so from a Shabbos standpoint, it's Rishus HaYachin. It's a private domain. One would be allowed to carry in the Mavui. Here's what the rabbis were worried about. They were concerned that because it was opened up into Rishus HaRabim, so therefore, people will confuse and say, well, if I can carry in the Mavui, so then what's the problem with carrying in the Rishus HaRabim? Basically, the Mavui anyway is a high traffic area. People are turning from the Rishus HaRabim into the Mavui. A number of people, because there are a number of chatzeros that are open into the Mavui. And so it's high traffic area. So what the Chachamim said is that even though Minat Torah, the Mavui is a Rishus HaYachid, but we don't want people carrying in the Mavui because people are going to confuse the Mavui with the Rishus HaRabim. Therefore, the Chachamim said, if we're going to carry in the Mavui, we got to make a hecker. We got to make some sort of distinction, delineation, which shows us that this is where the Mavui ends, and this is where the Rishus HaRabim begins. So how do you demarcate? So the demarcation comes with either one of two things, either with a lechi or with a korah. A lechi is a vertical pole on one of the sides of the Mavui. Remember, we had a big debate in the beginning of the Masechta whether you need one or whether you need two. But that's one possibility. Or another way of delineation is by placing a korah, a beam that goes over the top of the entrance of the Mavui, so that people will see, hey, look, even though I don't need a fourth wall, that beam that goes over the top, a horizontal beam that goes over the top, is there to demonstrate to everyone, show everyone, this is where the Mavui ends, this is where the Rishus HaRabim begins. Once the korah goes over the top, then people are allowed to carry within the confines of a Mavui. Carrying then from a Mavui to a Chatzar, that's a different story. That requires Shituf. We don't have to discuss that now. It's important, but we don't need to discuss it now. Although, to be fair, Rashi does bring it up, but we don't need to discuss it at this very moment. Now, the Mishnah in Erevin, the first Mishnah in Erevin, tells us the following. That if I have, now the Mishnah is referring to the Korah, even though it doesn't say the word Korah, it calls it a Mavui, but Tanan Hasan, we learned in the Mishnah over there, Mavui Shigavo Me'asu Mama Yimat. That if the Mavui is higher than 20 Amos, meaning if the horizontal beam, the Korah, is higher than 20 Amos, so what do? So bring it down. That's all. Correct it. It's too high, so bring it down. Rav Yehuda Amar Netzarach, and Rav Yehuda says that's not necessary. Now you'll notice that the similarity between the Rav Yehuda position in Erevin and the Rav Yehuda position in our Mishnah. Rav Yehuda in our Mishnah allows the Sukkah to be higher than 20 Amos. Rav Yehuda in the Mishnah in Erevin allows the Korah to be higher than 20 Amos. Okay, but that's not even what the Gemara is going to focus on. What the Gemara is going to focus on is the terminology use and the distinction between the Mishnah in Sukkah and the Mishnah in Erevin. And the Gemara articulates the question. A very simple question the Gemara wants to know. Our Mishnah says, you know what happens if the schach is higher than 20 amos? Your sukkah is disqualified. It's possible, it's no good. Period. The Mishnah in Erevin, which deals with basically a very similar concept, if the korah is higher than 20 amos, so what do? Yimat. We'll lower it. The Mishnah in Erevin is nicer. The Mishnah in Sukkah is not nice, it's blunt. And basically what bothers the Gemara is, our Mishnah needed to be blunt, didn't need to. Meaning our Mishnah could have just simply said, well, lower it. Why is the Mishnah Erevin being helpful in telling us what to do to rectify the situation, and our Mishnah here in Sukkah is not, it would work, meaning if we took the Schach and lowered it, the Sukkah would be great, it'd be fine, So why doesn't our Mishnah also give us a way to rectify the situation, and why does our Mishnah use such blunt terminology? Gemara gives two answers to explain this. Sukkah daraisa tini psula mavui derabanan tini tekanta. Answer number one. The din of sukkah is a din daraisa. Right? We started off this year, this morning, going over the psukkim in the Torah. It's a din daraisa. So therefore, the Mishnah here is justified in saying psula. And it's a mavui, kore, lechi, those are dine derabanan, those are rabbinic laws. And so therefore, the Mishnah over there is going to tell us, tekanta is going to tell us how to rectify it. How do you make sense of the Gemara's answer? I mean, okay, so we understand. The Erevin halachas are dine derabanan. The sukkah halachas are dine daraisa. Okay, how does that respond to the question? The question is, why over there in Erevin is the Mishnah being nice and gentle and telling us what to do to correct the situation, and our Mishnah over here is just being blunt? And how does daraisa versus derabanan respond to that? Okay, so here, there's a proliferation of explanations. I'll limit it to Rashi. You could take a look at Tosfos, second Tosfos on the Amud, who gives a host of other explanations as well, but we'll just limit our comments to Rashi. So Rashi says, it basically goes like this. Before there was a Mishnah, so we had Chumash, meaning Torah Shabbat Peh was originally committed to oral tradition, but there was Chumash, and everyone knew the Chumash, and everyone read the Chumash. So when someone comes at you and says to you, hey, a sukkah is higher than 20 amas, so your response can be psula. Why? Because we knew about the halachas of sukkah. Sukkah is already established. If you take a look at the Rashi, so Rashi says, "De'eshrim amah dilah yafinu midaraisa v'kodem shenishneis haMishnah nemru shira miSinai." So this has been in existence. This fact has been in existence for now over 3,300 years, meaning since Torah was given at Sinai. So for the Mishnah to now come along and say, and what if it isn't? So the Mishnah is justified in saying psula, because we already know what to do, and if failure to do so, so the Mishnah just simply says, okay, it's no good. However, contrast that to Erevin. When it comes to Erevin, Erevin wasn't taught at Sinai. Erevin is a rabbinic institution. It's a takana derabanan. So it comes at a later point in time historically. So now the Mishnah needs to be gentler. The Mishnah tells us what to do to rectify the situation, because quite frankly, this was not already in place at the time of the Torah. Mavoi, take a look at the next Rashi. It's two Rashis down. Dekulo midarabanan. The institution of Mavu is a din derabanan. There is no requirement for the Korah on a Torah level. It's a rabbinic requirement. So therefore, tini tekanta, one more Rashi, delo shayach lemithne be lashon pasul. Because now what are you going to say? Oh, your Mavu is too high? No good. Hold on one second. Can we slow down? Mavu, what are we talking about? It's not a din daraisa, it's a din derabanan. Rashi says, Daman pasla karm shanishne mishna zu. Meaning, this is the first time we're hearing about it. Now, I know that's not totally historically accurate. Meaning, it's not, what do you mean, before the Mishnah, no one heard about Mavui? That's not, I understood that that's not historically so. Mavui as an institution was around for hundreds of years prior to the Mishnah. Mishnah was written in the year 200 of the Common Era, approximately. Mavui, the institution of Mavui, was around for much longer. Much earlier. So it's not, Rashi's point over here is not, well, before the Mishnah, who knew about it? But in terms of its appearance in any type of document, like, we know about Mavui, the rabbis instituted Mavui, but as a source material, like, where do we see it? In other words, what's the earliest source I'm going to show you something about Mavui? Answer, Mishnah. That's the earliest. So therefore, So it's its first appearance in Torah Shabbat Peh. So therefore, it's not going to be the Mishnah's place, the Mishnah's role to say, and if your mavui is higher than 20 amos, oh, that's no good. Well, hold on one second. I'm hearing about this now, or I should say better. I'm seeing it now for the first time. So it's necessary, therefore, for the Mishnah to be gentler and to say, well, if this is the first time you're hearing about it, so, okay. There's a thing called Korah. It's got to be placed at the entrance of your Mavui. It needs to be higher than 20 Amos. If it's not, you should lower it. Okay. But as opposed to Sukkah, where Sukkah's been around since Torah was given at Sinai. Adkan. That takes us through answer number one. Ibai Seima. So again, the question on the table. Our Mishnah in Sukkah tells us that if the Sukkah is higher than 20 amos, it's no good. The Mishnah in Erevin says that if the Korah is higher than 20 amos, okay, so lower it. And the question is, why Erevin is the Mishnah being nice and gentle, and why is our Mishnah being blunt and right to the point and saying it's no good? So answer number one, the difference between Sukkah being a Din D'Oraisa, Mavui being a Din D'Rabbanan. Another possibility, says the Gemara, is that no, when it comes to Dina Daraisa, it also would have been nice for the Mishnah to tell us how to rectify the situation. But Mio Sukkah Dinafish Mile Pasik Vitani Psula Mavu Dilo Nefish Mile Tani Takanta. Another possible answer is look at the Mishnayos. Our Mishnah over here in Sukkah, the first Mishnah, brings down how many halachas? 4 halachas. So now, for the Mishnah to give us a takana, a rectification of the problem, the Mishnah would now become very verbose. If the sukkah is higher than 20 amas, so you lower this. If the schach of the sukkah is higher than 20 amas, so you lower the schach. Okay? And then if it's lower than 10 tfachim, you have to raise it up. And what's going to end up happening is the Mishnah is going to be very verbose. And is that a problem? So Rashi says, yeah. Another, it's not a problem, but that's not the style of the Mishnah. The style of the Mishnah is to be as succinct as possible. So be as short and direct and as to the point as possible and conserve words. That was the style of the Mishnah. So our Mishnah here in Sukkah, had it told us the Takana, would have to have been wordier, more verbose. Our Mishnah wanted to avoid it. The Mishnah Erevin, which was a one agenda Mishnah, so therefore, the Mishnah to say, instead of the word psula, takanta, so there's no expenditure of words.
There's a practicality, isn't there? I mean, there's a mawi, is only 2 poles. You could cut it easier, whereas the sukkah is a whole structure.
Okay, that's also true. That's also true. But it's still, in other words, there's a way to rectify it. It's not a complicated rectification. Correct.
But it's not a lost cause.
Minahani mila. Okay, and for the remainder of today's daf, we're going to deal with one question, with 3 basic answers and possible differences between the 3 different answers. But the question on the table is, well, what's wrong? What's wrong when the sukkah is higher than 20 amas? Meaning our Mishnah tells us that the sukkah can't be higher than 20 amas. And, again, with exception to Rav Yehuda, our Mishnah says that if your sukkah is higher than 20 amas, your sukkah is no good. Simply no good. So now the question on the table is why? Why not? What's wrong with that? So here we're going to see the Gemara. The Gemara is going to introduce us to 3 possible explanations given by 3 different Amoraim. And then we just discuss for the rest of today various differences, possible differences between the 3 explanations. So now, position 1, number 1, Amar Rabba. Amar Kol Lamayin Yidu Dorosech and Kibbe Sukkos HaShavtis B'nei Yisrael. So we go back to the psukim that we introduced at our shir with today, in Parsha Zamor. So the Torah says that you should know, that, in other words, you sit in Sukkah today. We are 5,774 years after creation. So we're going to sit in Sukkahs today. Why? Because when we left the desert some 3,300 years ago, so we were sitting in sukkahs. Now, sitting in sukkahs, what does that mean? All right, so we'll come back to that discussion later in the Masechta. Meaning Anane HaKavod, right, clouds of glory, or sukkahs mamish, it's a machlokus between Tanayim. We'll come back to that discussion. But what we do is that we sit in sukkahs today to reenact the fact that when we left Egypt, we were in sukkahs while going through the desert. Good. Laman Yedu. Ad Esrim Ama. Adam yodeh shudar b'sukkah. Lamala me'asri mama, ein adam yodeh shudar b'sukkah. Mishum delo shalta be'enei. So therefore, you have to have yediyah. You need to have knowledge. Now granted, and the Gemara is going to make this point, the yediyah mentioned in the Torah was generational yediyah. Knowledge for generations. And we're going to be discussing now personal yediyah. Okay, and it's not the same, and the Gemara is going to acknowledge that. But right now, just to say the pshat, when you're sitting in the sukkah, you need to know you're in a sukkah. Now again, we go back to a point that we made in the beginning of the shir today, and we're going to keep hitting on this point again and again. You need to know you're sitting in a sukkah. What is the sukkah? It's not the walls. The walls are necessary, but it's a schach. So you have to be aware of the schach. So when I'm sitting in this room, ceiling is right now about 10 feet above our head. Okay, you know it. Meaning even if I'm looking down, I still have a knowledge that I'm in an enclosure. But you get to a point in time where it's so high that you're not going to have an awareness, you're not going to have a knowledge. And that's Rabba's explanation of why. When your schach is higher than 20 amas, so you simply won't know. So, delo shalta be'enei. It won't be within your awareness that you are sitting inside a sukkah. Okay. Gemara later on will talk about, well, even if it's higher than 20 amas, Can't you help create an awareness? We'll talk about that later in the daf today. Okay, so that's explanation number one. Rabba Yidia. Number two, Rabbi Zera Amar Me'achav Asukat Yelatzol Yomam Mechorev. Pasuk in Yeshayahu, describing what will happen in the times of Mashiach, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu will create for the Jewish people a sukkah, some sort of protective canopy, where it will serve as shade for the days and, let's tell Yomam Mechorev. Fine. Ad Esrimama, Adam Yoshev B'tzel Sukkah. Lamala Me'esrimama, Ein Adam Yoshev B'tzel Sukkah, Ela B'tzel Defanos. So, if your schach is below 20 amas, so now it provides shade for you. If it's higher than 20 amas, it doesn't provide shade for you. Now, I understand that we're really simplifying a more complicated discussion. And right, at what point of the day are we talking about? And where on the earth are you situated? And the angle of the sun comes in. Now, granted that the angle of the sun never is going to be perpendicular to where you are. Understood. The sun is always going to come in at some sort of angle. But still, in other words, we are oversimplifying a discussion in terms of where exactly are you situated. You're located where we're assuming that once the schach is too high, and because of the angle of the sun, you're not sitting under the shade of the schach. Okay, and let's leave it oversimplified, meaning there's no need to complicate it. But the general point that Reb Zera is making is that when your schach is too high, so you won't be enjoying the shade of the sun. The Gemara later will, however, add one other dimension to this discussion. And that is, what if your sukkah is really wide? Meaning, I understand that if your area of your schach is a confined area, and you're directly underneath it, you're not going to enjoy shade. But if your sukkah is really wide, can't the sun come in at an angle? And can't you still be enjoying the shade of the schach? The Gemara later on will raise that issue. So Abaye says regarding Rabbi Zera's explanation, oh, it's all about the shade of the schach. So let me ask you something. Let's say you make your schach right next to a huge building. Now I'm giving a modern explanation of the Gemara. The Gemara over here says, let's say you put your schach between two mountains, where basically you're not going to be enjoying the shade of the schach, because quite frankly, you're under the shade of the of the mountains, right? I have the good fortune. I compare notes with my neighbor Rabbi Flug. So he lives on the other side of Andorra Place. And what does that mean? The other side? It's the same street. Is that what happens on sukkahs? Is that I build my sukkah in my backyard. He builds his sukkah in his backyard. And basically, because of the angle of the sun, so basically we enjoy shade most of the day because of my house. And Rabbi Flug enjoys shade none of the day, because he's on the other side of Andorra. And so basically, by design, I'm in shade most of the time in my sukkah. So as the Gemara says, and if the whole purpose of the schach is to provide shade, so am I not fulfilling my obligation? So the Gemara says, no, because in the case of the mountains, or in our cases where you're building your sukkah right up against a tall building, so there, the house and the mountains are impeding the shade. But if I were to remove the house and if I were to remove the mountains, the shade could be provided by my schach. However, if my sukkah is so high where the shade of the schach now is coming off the perpendicular line and away from where I'm sitting, so there I have no potential to enjoy the shade of my schach, and therefore it's no good. So basically, to put it simply, at least when I build my sukkah next to a house, there's potential shade coming from my schach. But if my sukkah is too high, there's no potential shade. There's simply no shade, period, provided by the schach. Rava Amar Mehacha. Rava gives a third explanation. So again, just to recap, Rava says it's about Yediyah. Rabbi Zera says it's about shade. The defining point of the schach is shade. And now a third explanation is Rava. Rava says, Amar Mehacha, Sukkos Tishrei Shivas Yamim. Once again, we go back to Parshas Zamor. Quite frankly, we have nowhere else to go. Meaning, that's the place in the Torah where the Torah tells us about the mitzvah of Sukkah and Lulav. So we go back to Parshas Zamor, and Sukkos Tishrei Shivas Yamim. And the Torah tells us that you have to make a Sukkah for 7 days. By design, it only has to last 7 days. Right? When we make our houses, we're interested that they last for a while, because we like to live in them for a while. But when it comes to a sukkah, the Torah tells us that by design, we need to be sitting in a sukkah for 7 days. It needs to be constructed as a temporary structure. Amar Tarko Shiva Siyam and Say Madiras Keva Vesheva Diras Arai. What you're supposed to do during Sukkot is leave your permanent structure and go into a temporary structure. Ades Ramama Adamosa Diras Diras Arai. Now, if I'm making my Sukkot, I'm constructing it only for 7 days, and I make it under 20 Amos, I can make it a temporary structure, but Lamala Master Mama. But once we're talking about making a structure that's higher than 20 Amos, so now we're talking about brackets, reinforcement, in other words, series building material, just to make an edifice that big. So, Eina Damosa Dirasa Dirasa Raila Diras Keva. By definition, the only way I can construct a structure that big is only by making it as a permanent structure. And the Torah doesn't want that. The Torah wants a temporary structure. So Amalei Abai Elamiata Asa Mechitzu Shabarz of Sicha Chal Gaban Hachinami Dola Havisuka. So Abai says to Rava, his Chavrusa. So I don't understand. So you're telling me that if I build a sukkah under 20 amos, but I make it out of metal, and that thing is staying for a while, you want to tell me that such a sukkah is no good? Meaning that the reason why the sukkah has to be less than 20 amos is because it needs to be temporary. So let's say I confine myself to within 20 amos, but I make it out of metal. Are you still not within the guidelines of the Torah? Amalei hachi kamin alach. So Rava says to Abai, no, you misunderstood me. An chafama da'adam osa diras diras arai ki avad lai diras keva namin afik. Under 20 amos, you can make the sukkah however you want. Structurally speaking, there is no limitation in terms of what the material could be made out of. It could be made out of wood, it could be made out of metal, it could be made out of whatever you want. But at least if you're going to make it a temporary structure, you could do so. However, lamala mechafama, but once it's higher than 20 amos, da'adam osa diras diras keva ki avad lai diras arai namin lo nafak. But once you're above 20 amos, you literally have no choice. You cannot make a paper mache sukkah higher than 20 amos. It's just simply impossible. It will not stand. It cannot structurally stand. And so therefore, there is no potential to make it diras arai, and that's why the sukkah that high won't be good, because there's simply no possibility to make it a temporary structure.
Doesn't temporary structure mean the schach is temporary? In other words, the walls don't have to be temporary.
Correct. Again, we go back to the fact that really the defining moment of the sukkah is the schach. But to get the schach higher than 20 amos, the only way you could support it is by creating a permanent structure. It's the only way it could be supported. Okay. Ad Khan.
What about 10 amos? 10 amos or 20 feet?
I'm not going to disagree.
Why?
We got to draw the line somewhere.
What is the thing of 20, though?
Right. So, again, there comes a point in time where, right, that we saw this back in Yuma, meaning the Chachamim have to provide for us the guidelines. Now, it could be. Now, something is curious, which the Gemara doesn't really discuss. Meaning, is the 20 amos halacha Moshe Mitzrayim? I asked the question, I'm not really sure what the answer is. I don't know what the answer is. Meaning, most of the shiurim provided for us, in fact, the Gemara in Sukkah, right? We're going to see it in a short couple days from now, Daf Zion, Vav or Zion. So the Gemara is going to say that when it comes to shiur, any measurement given the Torah, it's halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. So is that also true regarding the height of a sukkah? Is that also halacha Moshe Mitzrayim? Now, I don't know. And I'm going to balk at the question, not balk at it, but just to simply shrug a shoulder, because if the Gemara could have just simply said Halacha Moshe Mitzrayim, the Gemara goes through three different explanations. I don't know. But once we have an explanation, so there has to be a line drawn in the sand. Okay, so you're right. I'm not going to argue. 20 feet is high. Okay, but the line drawn in the sand is 20 amos. Okay. We have now in front of us this halacha that a sukkah cannot be higher than 20 amos. We have in the Gemara three explanations. They are, just quickly to review, Rabbah's explanation of Yediyah. You have to have a knowledge base that you're in a sukkah. Once the schach is higher than 20 amos, you simply lack awareness. It's too high. We have the second explanation, Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera says because the defining role of your schach is that it provides shade. And once your schach is too high, you're not going to be sitting, if you're assuming that you're directly underneath the schach, you're not going to be enjoying the shade that's provided by the schach. So Rabbi Zera's shade, and then the third explanation given by Rava, who happens to be a Talmud of Rava, which of course is interesting, then it means that he's giving a different explanation than his Rabbi. But Rava says the reason is because of it has to be a temporary structure. The Torah demands that we make a sukkah for 7 days, and not more for 7 days, so it has to at least potentially be a temporary structure. Once you have the schach that's going higher than 20 amos, so there's no way that you can make it a temporary structure. Okay. Beis Amud Beis, we turn the page. Kulik Rabba Lo Amri Ha'i Adila Darasi. So the Gemara is going to explain. why doesn't two of the Amoraim agree with the third Amora? And we're going to do this for every one of the Amoraim. So first of all, why doesn't the others agree with Rabba? So that's very simple, because the idea mentioned in the Torah, Laman Yedu, it's not talking about individual knowledge, it's talking about generational knowledge. Yedia L'Dorothi. And so therefore, basically, the accusation against Rabba is that you're not saying the simple pshat in the pasuk. And you can't extract the halacha based on the non-simple pshat in the pasuk. Now, as far as Rabbi Zera is concerned, why don't they agree with Rabbi Zera that the defining role of the schach is the shade that it provides? Answer says the Gemara, because that pasuk Yeshayo is not talking about the mitzvah of sukkah. It's talking about here's what will happen during the times of Mashiach. So the Gemara says Rabbi Zera. Now the Gemara gives a defense of Rabbi Zera. Im kain leimakra v'chupati elatzal yomam. So Rabbi Zera says, okay, you're right, of course, the pasuk in Yeshayahu is talking about the protection that will be provided in the times of the Mashiach, but the choice of wording, the Navi uses the word sukkah. Didn't have to. Could have used the word chuppah, my sukkah tiyel etzol yama, shema mina tarte. The fact that we use sukkah tells us, as Rashi explains over here, that when, you're right, we're not talking about the mitzvah of sukkah. But we are talking about the definition of sukkah. What is sukkah? Meaning, once we have, the Navi could have used any word it wanted to. By virtue of the fact that the Navi used the word sukkah, it's telling us, here's what defines a sukkah. Cell. Shade. That's the definition. And therefore, based on that, now we'll go back to the mitzvah of sukkah, and we'll say that the definition of the mitzvah of sukkah is that something that provides shade. Shema mina tarte. Karavanami lo amre. And finally, to wrap it up, why don't the other two agree with Rava? Mishum kushid Abaye. Because if Abaye's difficulty, Abaye asked a question on Rava, and the question was, well, if I'm making an under 20 amos test, can I make it a permanent structure? Now again, Rava defended himself. Rava said, well, yeah, you're right, but at least you could potentially make it a temporary structure. But apparently the other Amorayim felt that Abaye's question was a strong question. Okay, and the truth of the matter is that we could sit on this Gemara longer, and Tosus points out, there are a number, right, Abaye asked a question to Rabbi Zera, how come the Gemara didn't bring that up over here? Okay, and you can further analyze these lines of Gemara, but we got to go on, we have a daf we need to finish. Kaman azla hadam Rav Yoshia Amarav. Now, our Mishnah says the sukkah can't be over 20 amos. Okay, any qualifiers? Meaning, is there any time where it's okay to make a sukkah over 20 amos? Now, the simple reading of our Mishnah is no qualifiers. Our Mishnah says you can't. In fact, our Mishnah says if you do so, it's possible. Okay, but is at least there is a possibility? Is there a possibility for any type of qualifiers where maybe under certain conditions they can be higher than 20 amos? So that's what we're going to be discussing now over the course of pretty much the remainder of the daf. So, Kamanda Azla Hadam Rav Yoshia Amarav. The statement made by Rav Yoshia in the name of Rav, Machlok is B'shein Defans Megil Saschach. The debate in our Mishnah between the Tanakam and Rav Yehuda as to whether or not a sukkah cannot be more than greater than 20 amos is only when the walls don't touch the schach. Okay, we're inside of a building, we're inside of a room, so you'll notice that there is a greeting of the wall and the ceiling. Right? Aval defanus megiyas schach. If the walls, the vertical walls, hit the schach, and they touch one another, much like in the room that we're in right now, I feel a lamalam. Yes, Ramah Makshera. Even if it's higher than 20 amos, it would be kosher. So a qualifier provided by Rabbi Yoshia in the name of Rav. Okay. Whose thought process is he following? Answers the Gemara. I mean, should figure it out, but the Gemara gives it away. Come on, Karabo. Ta'amra mishum dol shalta be'ena. V'kevin defanos megil tzachach mishal shalta be'ena. So he's agreeing with Rabba. Because what was it? According to Rabba, why? Why can't the sukkah be over 20 amos? Because you don't have an awareness. Oh. But once the walls of the vertical walls are hitting the schach, so now basically we've created an enclosure. And once you create an enclosure, it's hard to ignore the fact that we're sitting inside an enclosed area. And even if it's higher than 20 amos, if as long as you have the closed box, the closed wall, the meeting of the wall and the schach, so therefore you have yediyah, you have an awareness. Okay. So the Gemara says that we have an exception, a qualifier according to Rav Yoshia Amarav, And obviously he's falling within the thought process of Rabba. Kamaz lahadam Rav Huna Marav. Another qualifier provided by Rav Huna in the name of Rav. Machlok is now, right, Rashi notes already that they're both quoting Rav, and which one did Rav say? And okay, and that's obviously an issue, but okay, Rashi says, but that it happens. It simply happens that we have multiple Amoraim quoting Rav, and they may not agree with one another. So Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav Machlok is b'shem ba'al arba amos al arba amos. Aval yesh ba yosem arba amos al arba amos. Afilo ma'ala mi'asri ma'amak shera. So Rav Huna quotes in the name of Rav that if your sukkah area is greater than 4x4 amos, okay? So again, just assuming each amos is 2 feet, so if the area, length by width of your sukkah is greater than 8x8 feet, approximately, so then it's okay if the height of the sukkah is greater than 20 amos. Now, whose thought process is he following? Keman kerebi zera. So he's going like Rebbe Zera. Why? Damer mishum selhu v'kevin derevicha ikat sel sukkah. Now look, as we already pointed out, that you have to be under the shade of sukkah according to Rebbe Zera. Okay? If the area of the sukkah is really wide, we're granted that the sun is coming in at an angle, but there's still going to be a shadow of the schach cast into the area of the sukkah as long as your sukkah is wide, as long as the area is big. So what the Gemara now is just saying, an explanation of Rebbe Zera, is that as long as your sukkah is wide, how wide? Greater than 4x4 amas, so then you're fine. So then you'd be allowed to sit in your sukkah even if it's higher than 20 amas, according to Rebbe Zera. Now there's one more qualifier, one that was given by Rav Chanan bar Rava in the name of Rav. And he says that as long as your sukkah is wider than the area of your head, the majority of your body, and a small table. Meaning, what is the minimum dimensions of the area of a sukkah? So we haven't discussed that yet. We're about to discuss that in just a moment. According to Rav Chanan bar Rava, well, let's start off like this. The minimum area of a sukkah is your head, majority of your body, and a small table. Okay, that's the minimum area. So, can you imagine? I'm sitting at this table right over here. It's very low, but I could squeeze underneath, I could lie down underneath, and it would basically hold my head, the majority of my body, and obviously a tiny table. So this desk, I understand it's wrong material for the schach, but not so bad. But this table could basically serve as a sukkah. Okay, what Rav Chanan bar Rava says is that as long as your sukkah is wider than this, then it can be higher than 20 amas. In terms of its vertical height. Now, whose thought process is he following? Is he following the idea thought process, the shade thought process, or the temporary structure thought process?
Why not Rabbi Yehuda's
opinion? Okay, well,
it could be a qualifier of Rabbi Yehuda.
No, because all these Amoraim are trying to explain at what point will the Chachamim agree to Rabbi Yehuda. So basically, whose explanation of the Tanakhama are we following? Says the Gemara in this regard, Delo Kechad. Right, so your choices are, right, you ever take multiple choice tests? I'm sure we all did. Right, A, B, C, or D. What's D? None of the above. So for this qualifier, D. None of the above. Okay. Which, by the way, leads to a very simple question. Well, then, what's his thought process? Meaning, there are only three choices that were given to us. Either it's idea, or it's shade, or it's because it's a temporary structure. And now he's not going like any. What's he thinking? So Toso says five Tosos him down. So he suggests time of Yesh Mefarshim Mishum to have a lul shatana golem. Once it's that small, once it's that narrow, it looks like a chicken coop. In other words, it's not a sukkah, it's a chicken coop, right? This is a pigsty we're living in over here. Okay. So when the sukkah is that small, that's a chicken coop. Okay, that's not a sukkah anymore.
4x4 is not.
No, but we're not. You're right, but we're not in the 4x4 amas. This is even smaller. This is Rosho, Rubo, Veshochano. It's much more. It's a much smaller area. Bishlama de Rabbi Yosha pligad Rav Huna Rav Chanan Barava de Inu Kayav Yishir b'Mashcha v'Yilo Kayav Yishir b'Mashcha. So the Gemara notes. Look, we just gave three qualifiers. So qualifiers 2 and 3 were about the minimum area. Qualifier number 1 had nothing to do with the minimum area. It had to do with the meaning of the vertical wall and the schach and the horizontal schach. Ella, Rav Huna Rav Chanan Barava Neima Bechshor Suka Kemiflegi Tamar Saver Hechshor Suka Barba Amos Tamar Saver Hechshor Suka Bemechzekas Rosh Aruba Vishulchanu. Could it be, asked the Gemara, that the difference between position number 2 and position number 3, qualifier number 2 and qualifier number 3, could it be that they're actually arguing over the minimum area of a sukkah? Is that possible? No. The Gemara says no. I mean, yes, it's possible, but the Gemara rejects it. Now, everyone's in agreement that the minimum area of a sukkah is your head, the majority of your body, and a small table. And over here, the debate is that Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanakhama argue only when it is Rosh HaRubah V'Shochano, Avayosim Rosh HaRubah V'Shochano Divrei HaKol Ksheira, but once it exceeds that area, you can make the sukkah as high as you want. Umar Safram, no. Rosh HaRubah V'Shochano Adalad Amos Pligi, Aval Yoster Midalat Amos, once the sukkah is greater than area of 4 amos, everyone says it's kasha. Meaning, no. In terms of the minimum area of a sukkah, they agree. In terms of when do Rabbi Huda and the Tana Kama argue, that's where they disagree. Good. Meisvei. Okay. Adkan. An important discussion, right? The Hedy's favorite discussion. Okay, we just went through a lot of opinions. Meaning, we have a machlokas and a mishnah between the Tanakhama and Rav Yehuda whether or not a sukkah can exceed 20 amas. Tanakhama says no, Rav Yehuda says yes. So let's start off by saying that we follow like the Tanakhama. Good. What's the reason behind the Tanakhama? So the Gemara gave us three explanations, either because of yediyah or because of shade or because of temporary structure. Of those three, which one do we follow? And why is that important to know? Because the Gemara just told us that they're going to be perhaps exceptions, qualifiers, based on the explanation given. Meaning that, according to Rabbah, if the vertical wall hits the horizontal schach, so then it could be higher than 20 amos. Do we follow that? Or, according to Rabbi Zera, once you make your sukkah wide enough, you can make your sukkah higher than 20 amos, because you're still going to enjoy the shade of the schach. Do we follow that? So, that's an important question. And the Rishonim are not in agreement with one another. But just to express the position of the Rush, the position of the Shulchan Aruch, we follow like Rava, the last position, that it by definition has to be a temporary structure. If so, the Rush points out, the Shulchan Aruch points out, so then it ends up that we don't agree with any of the qualifiers that were provided. Meaning, to put it simply, it's a nice way to summarize the daf and to end the daf, the sukkah can't be higher than 20 amos, period. Because, again, according to Rava, it has to do with, it needs to be a temporary structure. And once you're making it above 20 amas, by definition, it can't be a temporary structure. So under no circumstances, it won't matter whether or not the vertical walls hit the schach. Doesn't matter. It won't matter whether or not the area is really wide where I'm still enjoying the shade of the schach. That also doesn't matter. It, by definition, cannot be a permanent structure. So therefore, simply put, the sukkah cannot be higher than 20 amas, period. Because we follow the last explanation, that of Rava. Meisvei, just to finish up the actual daf itself, the Gemara challenges based on a braisa. Meisvei. Sukkah she gavola mala miyasri mama psula. If the sukkah is higher than 20 amas, it's no good. It's disqualified. Rabbi Yehuda machshir ad arba'im v'chamishim amah. Rabbi Yehuda says, you can make it 40 amas, you can make it 50 amas. I'm Rabbi Yehuda ma'isa behiloni amalka. There was an incident with Hiloni amalka. Hiloni amalka, one of the, during the period of the Second Temple, so she got turned on to Yiddishkeit. She went through a conversion. Her parent, right? She went through the conversion. So, but anyway, so, and she made a sukkah to send a sukkah. Hilani Amaka Balud. Shaisa Sukasa Gavo Me'etzri Mama. Now she was a queen, right? Money for her wasn't much of an issue. She made her sukkah high. It was higher than 20 amas. Vayuzakenim Nechrasim Yotzim L'sham. And we had the elders going in and out of her sukkah. V'lo Amrla Davar. And no one protested even though her sukkah was really high. This is Rav Yehuda's argument. So they say to Rav Yehuda, okay, but she's not obligated in the mitzvah of sukkah. She's a woman. A woman is not obligated in the mitzvah of sukkah. Mitzvah of sukkah is a time-bound mitzvah. And women are exempt. So she made her sukkah not to qualification, not to specification. Okay, so what? She's not obligated. So Rav Yehuda's counter-argument to the Chachamim is, okay, she's not obligated, but she had sons, and we know she had seven sons. And on top of that, she follows the rabbis, meaning she wasn't interested in making a sukkah not to specification. She was interested in making a sukkah to specification. So lama lemisna va'od. Now the Gemara says that second point of Rav Yehuda seems to be unnecessary. Now the Gemara says no. Kol ma'aseh lo aseh ala pi chachamim. Hachi kamar lehu. Ki some rabbanim ketanim hayu. Well, maybe the argument could go like this. Yeah, she had seven sons. But she couldn't have had them in succession. Meaning, how old is her oldest son?
At least seven.
Right, 7 years of age. Okay. V'ketanim peturim min asukah. And we know that, okay, so in other words, she's not obligated in sukkah because she's a woman. And her children are not obligated in sukkah because they're minors. Okay, but her oldest is seven, so that means now that he's entered the age of chinuch. Okay, there's a mitzvah of chinuch. But that's still not a biblical obligation. So the Gemara says, and maybe you wanted to argue, okay, that's a din de rabbanu, it's not a din de raisa, the mitzvah of chinuch, tashma va'od komaseh lo asa ela al pi chachamim. So the Gemara points out, that's what the need of the second clause of Rav Yehuda. Not only is she interested in making a sukkah to specification, she follows the words of the chachamim. And since she had a child that was at least 7 years of age, so that means that she was interested in being mechanic her child. There's a din de rabbanan, and she follows the dine de rabbanan to educate and to train her children how to do mitzvahs. So therefore, if she's sitting in a sukkah that's over, that's 40 amas high, it must be because it's okay. That was Rav Yehuda's counter-argument to the Tanna Kamma. Okay, so what we got from there is that it sounds like from this brisa, it would be acceptable to make a sukkah over 40 amas, according to Rav Yehuda, using the sukkah of Hiloni Malka as a model. Okay, quickly to review. So we introduced ourselves to the first Mishnah in sukkah. We're talking today specifically about the maximum height of a sukkah. Tanna Kamma says it can't be over 20 amas high. Three explanations given in the Gemara as to why not. Why can't it be higher than 20 amas high? Either because there has to be a yediyah, you have to have an awareness in your sukkah, that's Rabbah. Rabbi Zera says it has to do with shade. You have to be sitting within the shade of a sukkah. And Rava says, because structurally speaking, you can't make a structure higher than 20 amas and make it a temporary. It has to be a permanent structure, and the Torah does not want that. The Torah wants it to be a 7-day structure. Based on these three explanations, the Gemara gave possible qualifiers that under certain circumstances, you can make your sukkah over 20 amas. And then the Gemara went on to discuss more evidence for Rabbi Yehuda that a sukkah is allowed to be higher than 20 amas, and ultimately, as I pointed out already, we're going to end up rejecting rejecting the position of Rabbi Yehuda.